Hi, and welcome to episode 2 of the second season of the Connect You podcast. My name is Jeff Cullen.
And I'm Mark Hughes.
Hello, Marcus.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Just trying to get everything in line. We're recording.
I'm excited to be doing the visual and audio again this week.
Although we have been delayed because, well, I'll talk about that later.
There you go.
We have coffee, though.
Right on. We also have some exciting news. So I think we had kind of set a late stage target of 1,000 downloads for season one, and we exceeded it. I think we're at, as of this morning, when I guess the first, I guess this would be the official end of season one as episode one would be dropping. We were over at, I think, 1,005. So I'm actually blown away that we have 1,005 downloads for our show. And that's really cool.
It is really cool. It is really cool.
And momentum is building. Now that we have this video, who knows, right?
Exactly. And nobody can watch the video as well.
I've seen, I heard that Markiplier had 17 billion downloads total.
Oh my God.
So we're on our way.
So today's coffee. So we have no treat today because, well, we're starting a healthy start to this new season. We have, it's from 94 nice. Celsius Roasters out of Montreal. It's called Les, how do you pronounce that? Odysseys.
How does it? Les Audacieuses. The audacious ones.
Okay. Yeah. And, it's from Chiapas, Mexico, and, Sul de Minas, Brazil. It is supposed to taste orange, praline, and cocoa.
Ooh, so it's a blend of Mexican and Brazilian beans?
Yeah. Oh, that's very nice.
How audacious.
This is apparently from mostly women producers.
Oh, wow. Oh,
there's maybe two women producers that give them the money and resources to get their cup quality up.
That would explain. Les Audacieuses is the feminine of the audacious ones.
Ah, so there you go.
That explains it. Oh, very cool. Well, no, it's quite nice.
What's your dad joke today?
Dad joke. Well, first of all, we have a new cast member, Mr. Sparky, will be joining us.
Hello, Sparky.
For our weekly dad jokes. How's it going? He doesn't say much. He's a dog.
But he will provide comedy.
Okay, I have another Star Trek dog joke.
Okay.
And Mr. Sparky is a big Star Trek fan. Is that right? Okay, good. How many Klingons does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know.
None, because Klingons are not afraid of the dark. Okay. All right. Mark, do you have one?
Yeah, well, I went to see my doctor and he talked to me about a new surgery that that he had performed on a guy. He had replaced the guy's toe with a mint.
Okay.
That guy now has a tic-tac-toe.
He has a tic-tac-toe. What do you think, Mr. Sparky? All right. Well, we'll see you. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
All right. That's
terrible.
Tic-tac-toe. Okay. Moving along. What
did you learn this week?
What did I learn this week? Holy crap. I learned a bunch of stuff, but let's pick a few astrophysics kind of related things.
Sounds cool.
The first thing so there's a podcaster named Jean, I think it's Jean-Paul Gaudier, who is a science fiction writer, and he does a pretty good podcast / YouTube channel.
Yep.
And so he was talking about, I guess there's been some research that seems to indicate that the formation of RNA is actually really, really simple compared to what we'd always assumed it was difficult. And of course, RNA being one of the building blocks of life.
Yep.
So this has not been confirmed independently as the scientific method, but I think it's a paper out of Paris where they apparently very simply mixed a bunch of chemicals together and poof. So now they're saying RNA, you could basically make it happen in a high school chemistry lab. The reason that's significant is that it would basically indicate, if this is true,
you can create life anywhere.
That there'd be life, simple life, at least, you know, microbial life, pretty much anywhere, right? So all of these exoplanets,
as long as they have water. It's like if you put the an infinite number of monkeys, you'll get all the works of Shakespeare. Yeah. So if you basically have an infinite number of...
even more than that. And it turned out it was something about water leaching through some kind of volcanic soil.
Really?
That apparently that's what sort of creates the process. And again, that's something that's really common, not only on Earth, like all sorts of different places. So now they're looking for evidence of that having happened kind of independently. And if we find that, then suddenly it's like any planet that would have those conditions of soil and liquid water, you could get RNA. And then, you know, it's the magic elixir for starting life. Yeah. So that was pretty interesting.
Very cool. That is really cool. And I have to say, one of the things I really appreciate is when I'm doing the engineering, putting the episodes together, yep. I'll go through and I'll try and find links to all this information. It's super, you know, occasionally you or I are a little bit off on some of the topics, but in general, we're pretty bang on. It's pretty amazing considering how off the cuff we are. So today is a sad day.
Oh,
it's a sad day because the Oilers were officially finished yesterday. They were swept out in overtime.
Right.
It was a really good game. It was really exciting. But they couldn't quite finish. I think the injuries just kind of took their toll on the Oilers. They were missing Yamamoto. They had both Dreisaitl and Nurse were injured.
Yeah.
And it turns out that Nurse had a torn hip flexor and has for the entire playoffs. But only became super, super obvious during this last series.
Sure.
I don't think we know quite yet. We might by next week what was the injuries for Dreisaitl, but he did not look like he was still contributing. I mean, I think he had four assists.
Yeah.
And,
Not at his top.
He was struggling getting around at times. Anyway, so that's a sad day, but they made it to
semifinals. Holy crap. It's been a while since that happened. And
it's been a long time. Yeah. Well, 2006 and before that, even longer, it probably. The decade of darkness has kind of passed a little bit, and I think they're in good shape for next year.
I never get excited. There's been so much talk since we moved to Edmonton 25 years ago. It's like, yeah, okay, fine. Like if it happens, great. If not,
well, I think they hit a excited.
But good on them.
They hit a slightly better team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, Colorado, was pretty, pretty strong.
They had 14 more wins or some.
So, but I mean, that's the nature of the playoffs, right? Like the higher you get, the harder the competition.
And exactly.
So, well, good on the Oilers.
They did better than I thought they would. Yep. And, I think they're set up for next year. So the second thing I learned was despite your best intentions, despite screwing up and fixing video issues.
Oh, yes.
Because last week's video ran out of time. So we only had 30 minutes of record, and I think it wasn't even 30, it was like 28.
And we ran on for like 58 minutes. Yeah, we went
52 minutes. So anyway, this week should be better.
That's okay. This is, I was just telling somebody, we forge ahead and we learn, right? Exactly. This is how you do stuff.
Yeah.
The only thing I learned, I'm not really sure what to conclude about it.
So the issue with the video is so you can get everything all ready and then you have to deal with YouTube.
Yeah, that's right.
So
hopefully that'll work.
That'll get resolved, yeah. I think, today.
I think we'll start a channel as well. Like, yeah. I think this will be under your channel for now, but we'll get one set up.
Well, because my channel is
so verified. That we can start catching up to Markiplier, 17 billion downloads.
Well, the thing with YouTube is you have to be verified in order to be able to do over 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah. So, verified as what?
No, that just means existing? Providing your cell phone number.
So. Okay. Don't tell them we're doing, don't say we're doing children's stuff because we're not.
No, that's a bad idea.
The only thing I learned, and again, I'm not sure what to conclude of this other than, the scientific method is awesome, but sometimes
really good.
you can see where it gets supplanted by politics or dogma. So the Voyager 1 space probe has been 45 years. It's been out there. It's about 17, I think this is 24 billion kilometers from Earth. It's the furthest thing that we've ever sent out into space. Still operational, supposed to operate till 2025. Takes 20 hours for signals to reach it and for them to come back. And it's still, they can still generate data from it, and they can still give it instructions.
Right.
But apparently over the last short period of time, it has been sending back very weird signals that they can't, they don't know what it is. And yet the NASA astronaut, scientists, and this is the funny part, they're like, we don't know what it is, but it's not aliens. Like, isn't that NASA's always,
we don't know
what it is, but we know what it's not. It's like, no, you don't. It could be anything.
Well, my understanding is that they're pretty sure they have an idea of what's causing the problem. And part of it is that it's so far out there that there is so Earth has got its own magnetosphere.
Right.
And there is one that is associated with the sun, and it extends out
further.
Yeah. So all the planets are within this. And so it's actually the Voyager is exposed to not just cosmic rays, but I think they call it galaxy cosmic rays, which are this like extra level of uncomfortable. And they're expecting, they think that some of the hardware has failed and is causing
fried.
Some of these random. Yeah,
that would make sense.
Yeah. And it's some very particular systems that they're pretty sure that it's narrowed down to. So this is why they know what it's not there. So the bizarre signals appear to be related to an internal issue, and it's almost out of power, right?
Right.
It's using nuclear fuel, and the nuclear fuel will run out.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially, and
so it'll be out there until it's found by that machine planet.
And yeah.
Then it comes back.
V'ger.
Yeah, exactly. Looking for its creator.
Surprised it didn't show up in Strange New Waves.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Strange New Worlds.
Strange New Worlds. So that's what I've learned, amongst other things.
So today's topic we've decided to talk about was dealing with change and change management, both personally and organizationally.
Right.
So did you want to start? Or did you want me to start?
Well, why don't you lay the foundation, and then I'll add to it.
Well, I think it's really interesting because so when I retired, semi-retired, what you really realize with individuals as they're going through that change is two things. And I think there's a famous quotation that that is basically you need three things to be happy in life.
Right.
Something to do, someone to love, and something to look forward
to. That's right. Exactly.
And the problem with a lot of that change to retirement is people go like, well, you may or may not have somebody to love.
Right.
You.
Now that I can't force my employees to love me.
You now may not have something to do.
Right.
And because you don't have something to do, you don't have anything to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly.
So people think the thing they're looking forward to is the day they can retire. And then they think they're just going to be sitting on a beach that's not what's going to happen. But the other thing is that sometimes people push back their retirement so far.
Right.
That you have the flip side is that the thing they've always wanted to do is travel, the thing to look forward to.
Right.
And then they don't actually, they wait too long. Now all of a sudden there's health issues or there's some real issues in terms of traveling if you're over 75.
That's what you were saying.
Because there's some, you can't really get
travel insurance
unless it's obscenely expensive. Right. Plus at that time, you're not moving super great.
Well,
some most people.
Yeah.
Most people. So there's this window. So if you're going to retire at 65, you got about 10 years to get whatever traveling you want to get in.
Sure.
And so that can be something to look forward to, but you also need something to do. It provides structure to your day. It helps you get up in the morning. Yep. It's better than just doom scrolling on Twitter all day.
Watching Fox News. Yeah.
And not having that job anymore and especially I see it with friends of mine who are professionals.
Right.
So they, you know, maybe they're an engineer and now they're retiring from engineering and so much of their identity, was tied up with who they were.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
So it's like, well, you're not an engineer anymore. What do you mean I'm not an engineer? I'm still an engineer.
That's right.
Yeah.
Fixing stuff. And it's fascinating.
Or a lawyer or adjuster or
whatever. Yeah. So change management is such a vast topic.
Oh, it is.
We could look at it within organizations, but I like where we're going with it. And let's keep it simple, which is, so on the personal side, and I mean, this is a big problem or a big part of the exit planning stuff that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it's the third, what they call the third leg of the stool. So a lot of traditional exit planning is around what am I going to sell my business for and the mechanics of it. And you have people who either fail to consider what life is going to be like after the day after they exit, whatever circumstances.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about this with somebody yesterday, and I was using your brother-in-law as a bit of an example without naming his name, but then you also have the person who stays on, gets bought out by a big company, and the massive change of no longer being
the
go-to
dog.
Person, right? Yeah. They're like, you're sticking around because we got to pick stuff out of your head, but really you're kind of powerless from now on, right? Or maybe they say, we'll take you into account, but the reality is, particularly if you get bought out by like a big corporation,
and then
pretty quickly they're like,
you may have issues. I mean, I kind of went through this too when we merged with financial accountability. Before, you were the one who's accountable, and you know maybe your mortgage or whatever is on the line, and now somebody's paid for that, but they expect you to perform.
Oh, that's the other
side. And
the
performance levels are like really high, and you're going like, okay, I need to fire how many people? What, you know? So you're told your margins aren't good enough, therefore you need to, you know, reduce your expenses, and especially in a lot of professional service firms, the main cost is people.
Yeah.
And then maybe you have gotten rid of people, but there's a cost associated with that. And then there's also, you may lose functionality or your ability to do certain types of jobs because maybe there are certain individuals that provide that. Maybe it's not super lucrative at the moment. And the other thing is, what if you're dealing with waves, right? Like you have a dip.
Right.
So a lot of entrepreneurs will hold on for the dip and anticipate
and
the
hope
dip
hope
that it comes back. And then when it does, they're great.
Right.
But the flip side is that bigger, more, you know, publicly traded organizations and stuff like that, they're just not going to wait.
That's right. Exactly.
So sometimes it's best to get out of the way.
Absolutely. And trying to catch that peak, it's a little bit like the market, you know, it's kind of foolish. You're better off to, I think, get out when maybe not at the total bottom, but, you know, trying to wait, hang on till the best time. It's like timing the market. It's fascinating we're talking about this because obviously, so I teach change management, you know, as part of the management course. And that's kind of the type of change where an organization is saying, we need to impose change.
Right.
And that has all of its complications, and there's a whole model to deal with that. But this is interesting because we're talking about change that maybe somebody is reluctant. I mean, people are always reluctant, but this is kind of change sort of imposed by time, right? Like there is no option to say, I'm not going to ever retire. That's kind of like saying I'm never going to die. And that's tricky for people to hang on to. But I think to me, the first step I think has got to be getting comfortable with the idea, which I think a lot of us struggle with.
Yeah.
Right. Like you said, those three things, right? And then once you're comfortable, maybe comfortable is the wrong word, but no longer denying the idea of the reality.
Yeah.
To then start having those thoughts. Okay. So what am I going to do? And then a part of it is that disassociation of identity from you know, what you do is not who you are. My wife was just dealing with some, of course, she's still practicing law and was in a thing yesterday and saw these lawyers who are still very much in that world of uber competition and one-upmanship. And you start to think, yeah, the minute that person stops being
part
what
of that,
they are or what they do, they're going to have problems, right? Because so much of their identity is.
Well, and it goes even further because as you get older, or I think it goes further, as you get older, your circle of friends tends to shrink.
Yes.
Right?
Unless you put unless in a huge amount of effort
to get that. Out there yes. and do things and with people that you're interested in. So,
right.
So you can do effort exactly. with people you're not interested in, but that's a whole different issue. But so the you end up with fewer friends.
Yep.
So and a big part of most people's work is that actually provides external inputs of people who
right.
you might not normally encounter.
Absolutely.
And then you discover, yeah, like this person, like, you know, and then you socialize sure. with
totally
with those people. Absolutely. Whereas you yeah. don't, if as soon as you retire, it's kind of like, are you going to go hang out at the Alberta Society for the Retired and Semi-Retired? And you know, and I'm that relatively
would be,
young
that would
as
be
a
yeah.
I'd be hanging out with a lot of significantly older people.
That's right. It's or going to McDonald's, catching the early morning.
Yeah, the early morning coffee.
Every McDonald's has a bunch of old people that just you know, which I think good on them, right?
Oh,
right?
That is
because
that
that's their but.
Well, and some people are really good at keeping contact with all of their friends and.
Yep.
And I mean, it was funny because
some people have grandkids and that becomes, you know, they put their focus on that. And I think, OK, great. You know, but even that, I'm like,
well, the advantage of grandkids and, you know, is that you get sort of this new infusion of life
yeah.
and exposure to people and
right.
They're, you know,
and they're not your kids. So
they're
you're
not
like,
your kids. You give them back. Oh, little Johnny pooped his pants.
Yeah.
Here, Mom.
Exactly. So,
and, right. But it really is a bit of it is a bit of a thing to deal with. All of these things all happening at the same time. My brother-in-law is, you know, exploring what to do
right.
moving forward.
He hasn't called me yet, you know.
Not surprised.
And we were talking about him, and again, you know, it's not like money is a problem.
No.
And that's the thing I think a lot of people, and this is pretty common in life, right? You see this with people who win the lottery, but I think we're conditioned as a society to think that money is this sort of magical solution. And I mean, certainly I think a lot of people would argue having more money is better than having no money. It does eliminate a lot of problems.
But there is a limit to how much money you actually need.
You're sitting there, nothing to do, nobody to talk to.
Counting your money.
Yeah, exactly, right? Or you've gone to, so you see this with people who, yeah, their plan is to travel. Great. So they retire, you know, big pile of money. They go nuts for what, maybe a year or two. How many places can you actually go unless you're one of these adventurous types, you know? So you're going to go to all of the highlight places, but very few people are going to be then like, oh, I'm going to go and like, we're going to go into the jungles of Borneo. You're like, you know, you're 68 years old. You've never really done anything outdoorsy. You know, you're a cruise urban travel type person,
well,
right?
Well,
you're a breakfast and croissant. You're not going to cross the Serengeti or that's just not. So you're going to run out of stuff to do. Right?
Well, my wife's uncle, at 65, he started traveling. So he had
right.
never really traveled before. So he would plan, and he, you know, he had accumulated a fair bit of wealth.
Right.
So for 65, he retired at like 63 or something like that. But at 65,
yeah.
he started traveling.
Good.
And he went every year
right.
on a big trip. And it was like a month or 2 months. And it were big trips.
Yeah.
So he went all over. He went to China. He went to Africa.
Wow.
To,
that's awesome.
To He went to Europe. He went to Greenland. He went to, I don't know if he went to the Antarctic.
Greenland. That's awesome.
He took this exotic thing, a cruise ship. It was like a smaller cruise. Went to Iceland, Greenland.
And that's amazing.
Down to Newfoundland and everything. And in fact, his last trip was scheduled for like 2 or 3 days after 9/11. So in 2001.
Okay.
And he was going to go to Australia and everything got clamped down. And that, he said, that's it, I'm done. And I think he would have been in his 70s, probably about 75. And then he just said, that's it. And he never traveled again.
Wow. Interesting.
And he died a few years ago. He didn't regret any of it. I've got binders and binders of all his photos from his trip. And
that's awesome.
And, well, yeah, but it doesn't mean much to me.
No.
It meant a lot to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And anyway, but it's
maybe you can create like an online memorial.
Well, this is the thing. He also
all his photos.
He also accumulated stuff. So he got things from each trip.
Sure.
And we have boxes of them.
Right.
So one of my projects that is not getting done has been to catalog. So I've done a bunch of them, but there's more that I need to do.
Right.
We're gonna catalog them and put them online and then we can get rid of them because part of the thing is the stuff occupies space, but I got no place to display all this stuff.
Right.
I'm not a museum. So.
No, exactly.
And it doesn't mean a ton. And so it's a combination. Some of the stuff is really quite valuable. And then you got other stuff that's like
junk.
It's like from the corner shop.
Right.
Right. Like those little stuffy puffins you stick on.
Okay. There you go. But I mean, so there you go. Like, obviously he was lucky. He was able to do that.
Yeah.
But so I think it's going to become, again, even disassociated from the business exit planning. Because, I mean, yes, business owners, it's going to be a tsunami of them exiting. And they are a little bit of a special breed because most of them highly associate, particularly the baby boomers, with their business.
Right? Oh, yeah. Well, and their identity is totally tied up with it.
But I do think there's going to be just the general population of people retiring. Like you said, professionals who have been very much wedded to their professional. And even I think people who hate their jobs, which I think there's a lot. I think they have this vision of freedom, you know, well, that whole freedom 55 thing. But I think we underappreciate how many things kind of disappear, like you said, that are kind of valuable, even if it's just going to the water cooler and seeing the same people every day and having
your health. I mean, like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Like when I turned 50, I discovered a bunch of stuff that was like aches and pains that I never had. And I still play volleyball with guys who are quite a bit younger than me. They can recover.
Yes.
A lot faster than I can.
Yeah, I know what you mean. This knee is still bugging me. And it turns out this, from teenhood, you know, ankle injury is now 40 years later popping up. It's like, oh, yeah, I don't have as much flex in that ankle. So you run, it screws up your knee. And I'm like, great. It never happened before. And the answer was like, yeah, well, you've never been 54 before. So that's the way it is. Actually, I saw Norm MacDonald. Well, he's got that new Netflix special that he did in his kitchen.
Norm MacDonald, who passed away.
Yeah. Before.
So he's got a new show?
Yeah. So before he went in for surgery, summer 2020, at the height of COVID, he was working on a Netflix special.
Okay.
And he was going in for a treatment. And he wasn't really sure, the way he put it, he didn't want to leave anything on the table. So he had his assistant set up a camera and a mic, and he just recorded like a 90-minute Netflix special at his kitchen table, just him.
Really?
Yeah. And so they've edited it now and they've put it on Netflix.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
But I saw him doing a bit while he was still healthier, talking about suicide. And again, you know, not something to joke about unless you're Norm MacDonald, but but the point was, he says, you know, in his usual style, he goes, every time somebody kills themselves, you know, other people are like, I don't understand it. And he's like, really? Have you seen life?
I can hear him saying that.
What do you think? You know, it's not going to get any better, right? So I was like, okay. But I think going back to what we were talking about, you got to have, I love those three things, right? Somebody to love. And it could, I think, again, we
it
have.
It could be a dog.
It could be volunteering. It could be
a friend.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a
romantic partner.
A romantic partner. Yeah. No.
Something to do. And then something to look forward to.
Yeah. Right?
Other than, I guess, the cold, grim embrace of death. If that's all you have to look forward to, you're in trouble.
Big trouble.
Find something else. Revenge, maybe. I don't know.
Exactly. Revenge is a meal, a dish best served cold.
And obviously, the people who must be the saddest, like Betty White, you know, days away from turning 100, and you're like, woohoo! I'm like, ah, crap.
Well, and I, that's the curse of getting old is you get to see all your friends pass away.
That's right.
So yeah. You need to have a steady supply of
new friends.
Of new friends who are young to fill in. I know as soon as I turn 50, and this is one of the blessings or curses of Facebook, you start to see friends that you went to school with or whatever, right, and they're just not doing so good. And you know,
That's true.
I recently went
to, I see pictures of people and I'm like,
you look so old.
What happened to you? Of course you don't say that in the comments. No. What the hell happened to you?
You look great. But I'm glad
you're still here.
When I lived in Ontario in Toronto for about 4 years, right around, you know, and left in 1990, the fall of 1990.
Okay.
And for the 4 years that we were there, I made good friends with this gentleman who was, you know, was in politics.
Okay.
With the NDP in Ontario. And I totally lost touch with him, right?
Sure.
So I actually, you know, one of these things you sometimes go down these rabbit holes, and I searched to try and find him, and I found him and I contacted him. And when I went there for a recent stopover en route to Newfoundland, I was able to connect with him. And in my mind, he's still the same like 40-year-old guy.
Right.
But he's 75.
Yeah.
And and I'm going like, wow, like. And he had a pretty powerful influence on me.
Right.
And it was great to see him. It was really great to see him. I kind of blew me away at.
Yeah. I've had the same experience. Or sometimes it'll be people that are sort of in the media. So I was telling my wife this morning, I saw a thing pop up. The original bass player for Bon Jovi passed away.
Oh,
and
right,
I'm like,
right.
Oh, okay. And then I was reading the article and he was 70. And I'm like, what?
Well, exactly.
Paulette's like, yeah, you're old. Like, you know, well, that's only 16 years older than you. Well, so when you were 20, he'd have been 36.
Well,
so
how old is Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones? And
Gene Simmons is, I think, just turned 75, right?
Yeah.
So it's amazing. Anyhow, so change inevitable. I think there is...
Managing personal change.
Yes. Although I just saw a guy yesterday on YouTube selling something, but his message was, when you're 50, you still have, unless something happens, you still do have a lot of time.
Right.
Like it's this dichotomy of, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of time. And yet, you know, 30 years, like if you go back 30, let's say you live to 85 or 90, if we're lucky, but that's a lot of years when you really look backwards, right? Like my oldest kid is 14,
you know,
and I'm like, shit, it feels like he's been around forever, right? Well, so project out 14 years, I'll be 70.
We have friends who live next door to this elderly lady. So she's 103.
103.
And she's living by herself.
Lives by herself.
She does have help that comes frequently.
Which she probably resents.
Well, but there's a couple of things. So, you know, at that point in time, you're really not counting your life, remaining lifespan in like double digits.
Okay. Not unless you're very, very, very enthusiastic about things.
Exactly.
You know, when I'm 112, I'm going to go travel.
But here's the catch is that her kids are well into their 70s.
Yeah.
Right. And there's grandkids. The grandkids are well into their 40s.
Right.
So you start doing the math and you're going like, holy crap. Like, and like, This kind of perspective on time is kind of wild. Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway.
So media, what kind of media have you been consuming?
Well, I got to see Top Gun. Yes. I was shooting a staff appreciation event and they did it at a cinema and they let me stay for the movie that they were at, which was Top Gun, which was really cool.
I really enjoyed it. I saw it with a friend who's a cinematographer, mm-hmm. video guy, and he was blown away by the camera work.
Oh, geez. It's interesting. You know,
not even just the in-flight stuff, but even he was pointing out all sorts of different techniques where they're blurring the back or
It was really done well.
And I thought it was, I mean, it's goofy, right? People have written about the premise of and how they, the mechanics of it are unrealistic. Oh, but then again, the first one was too.
It was crazy.
But I thought the way that they somehow recovered the feel of the one from the 80s, and yet it was still different, right? It was great. It was it's exactly what it needed to be.
Well, and so part of, you know, they came up with this reason why they needed to use F-18s, and the real reason they needed to use F-18s is because F-18s are two-seaters.
Right.
Or you can get them in two-seat variants, yes. so that they could put all the actors into the back seat while they film from the front.
I also heard that the military didn't want the F-35
The F-35s are all single seats.
They also didn't want to be kind of showcasing them.
That's right.
Because, I mean, the movie does play in China and Russia and
exactly.
other places, but.
Well, I think some of the fifth generation fighters that they were showing off were F-35s.
So. Right. And it's supposed to be Iran, right? By the way, that's the country. They always do that. It's nondescript. So, but people have done the math and are like, well, mountainous region, old F-14 lying around. I guess the Americans sold some to Iran.
Well, they also used some.
The Shah. So they're like, yeah, it's probably Iran.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, it was good. I really enjoyed it. I thought Tom Cruise looked really good. Actually, he looks better in the movie than he does in
reality. Did you have the little intro?
No.
Well, we saw it at the cinema, and then he's like sitting in the cinema, he's welcoming people. Oh, thanks for coming to see the movie. And we're like, holy crap, who's that? It's old man Cruise. And then in the movie, he's like
looking pretty good. Yeah. I missed that very, very beginning because I was putting my gear away I could come in.
So my friend said he probably lit it so he looks purposefully worse. So that then when the movie comes on, it's like, ooh, doesn't he look good?
He looks good.
Val Kilmer, right?
Val Kilmer, especially after seeing the movie Val. It really great perspective. I thought it was a great opportunity and I thought it was well done.
So I found out that his voice was when he did speak. They use AI.
No, they used his son.
Oh, really?
They did in Val. No, they probably used some AI as well.
Right. Because he's got an AI that they created for him where he can speak.
Apparently they used his son as well.
Okay.
So, that makes sense. But they did that as well in Val.
Right.
So just because kind of marginal.
So it was awesome. It's definitely worth seeing. I don't think there's going to be another sequel. I thought Miles Teller, who annoys me sometimes in certain movies, but I thought he was the perfect guy to play Edwards' son.
He looked it looked enough similar enough that it
well, in some of the mannerisms, and I just thought he did a good job. It kind of got funny at the end, right? Almost a little bit like a buddy comedy for a few minutes, and I was like, this is just hitting all the notes, right?
So, I saved your life.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of AI, a recreation of voices, episode 3 of Kenobi.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was really good. Oh,
that's
my God.
They've used snippets, new dialogue with James Earl Jones' voice.
Because James Earl Jones is quite old.
He's quite old, yeah.
And
so he still got credited. And apparently they did that in The Mandalorian as well with Mark Hamill. They used, it was his voice from when he was younger. That they just use AI to create the dialogue. So now you can't even believe
what they'll be like marionettes, right? Like you won't actually.
Yeah, well, that's right. So I thought that was awesome. Ozark. Oh my God. That show. Did you make it through the first season?
No.
Okay. I finished the first season and it's like, oh, and then the first episode of season two, there's a couple of scenes. There's one in particular where a baby is involved and it's like, oh my God. Oh my God. I can't believe this is happening. And at the last second it's like, psych. And I'm like, oh. So I've never watched a show where I've been so like disturbed the way they build a scene. It's brilliantly done.
Oh yeah.
And Jason Bateman just playing
Jason Bateman, the nice guy, except not.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so
it just appears to be a nice.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm enjoying that.
Strange New Worlds.
You know, Strange New Worlds. I was going to say Stranger Things. I want to go back to, cause I hear it's taken quite a turn, but Strange New Worlds, Paulette and I watched, I saw it the last week.
Amok Spock.
Yes.
That was good.
It's very funny. It's
very well done.
The performance of, I can't remember.
Especially when they switch.
Yes.
And it's believable, but they've done a good enough job that you believe it. And
Anson Mount, just the way he plays that, like, really? You know?
Really?
And he just like, doesn't miss a beat.
Is it?
Okay.
He well, is.
I can't fix this, but I have this other problem.
You need to fix that.
And you need to come with me, right?
It was, I find him incredibly compelling.
He really is good.
Well, so I watched The Eternals. Not The Eternals.
The Inhumans. Right.
And I tolerated it. The thing I really struggled with,
it was only one season, right?
It was one season. It's not very good.
No, well, it's kind of why it died, but
yeah, there's all kinds of reasons. The main character, one of the main characters, is Anson Mount.
Black Bolt.
Yeah, but here's the catch.
He doesn't speak.
He can't speak, because if he speaks, he kills people.
Right.
And
do they have the dialogue in his head?
Like they have him, so he will communicate to other people through kind of like his combination of sign language and knowing looks. And
great.
And
can you imagine the people putting this show together and they're like, is it gonna be a problem that our main character can't speak? Nah, I think it'll be fine.
And he's such a charismatic guy, especially when he speaks, because he's just so natural. And he's sitting there and
unbelievable.
So it was a really, really great. It was a great show. But anyway, I think that's it for this week.
I think that's everything. Yep.
We have a full video.
Woo-hoo! All right. Excellent. So on behalf of myself, Jeff Cullen.
And Mark Hughes.
And Mr. Sparky.
Hey, Sparky.
We'll see you next week.
Catch you on the flip side.
Good stuff. All right.
See ya. Bye-bye.